This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 177 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut. David Vanderhoof is off this episode, but he'll return next week. Joining me as our guest this episode is Ruben Houdighy. He's the owner of Sweep Wings RC, maker of FPV wings. You can find him at sweepwings.com. A little background by way of introducing Ruben, back in 2010, he received a little UMX Vapor indoor flyer. Over time, he grew more interested in RC flying. He built his own RC aircraft in 2011, and then FPV flying wings came along for him in 2012. He soon went out and sourced the materials to make his own wings. And by 2013, Ruben had made and tested his own design and came up with a name for his brand. By 2014, Ruben was officially a small company owner. Ruben, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Thanks, Max. I appreciate for having me be on your show.
Well, we're going to talk about a couple of different topics, and we hope to learn some new things, both myself and our audience. But let's start off talking about the flying wing design. What makes a flying wing different from other aircraft in terms of unmanned operation?
Well, the main differences to a traditional airplane is that the flying wing really it lacks a tail. And so it really relies on the elevons to make its movements throughout the air. So it's very unique looking. If it's next to an airplane, you would almost consider it a UFO in that aspect.
Well, when I think of fixed-wing drones, I think of them offering the advantage of longer duration, because in a multi-rotor, the rotors are serving really two purposes. One is to generate a lift, and the other is to provide thrust. But when you have a fixed-wing or a flying wing even, you have that wing to generate an awful lot of the lift. So that helps make it more efficient than a helicopter or a quadcopter or something of that sort. But from the operator's perspective, is flying one different than flying the other?
For in terms of aircraft, there's a lot of styles that are out there. Normally, for me, what I decided on was a high lift airfoil and a considerable amount of wing area. And for me, I wanted an aircraft that can carry camera gear to record my flight, so I can show my friends or whoever I was gonna, you know, upload the video to, you know, whatever program or YouTube or whatever is out there. So that was my main focus. Generally, the more wing area you have, is the better your flying wing will fly. Airfoil does play a key factor there too. There's a lot of variations that are there.
Well, how did you design the first one of these? I mean, what kind of background did you have to do that, or what kind of resources? How did you learn how to design a flying wing aircraft?
It was a lot of practice and a lot of studying. YouTube is just a great source for information. I have a really good gift for tinkering and just understanding concepts and builds and figuring out, you know, why and how things work is one of the things I really just love to do. And after watching the videos of other manufacturers and builders and DIY guys that are on YouTube, I decided to take a crack at it. And I wanted to design something that, you know, had a nice sweep to it. And it was all kind of just guesswork, but I kind of had an idea. And I decided to give it a go when I cut it and shaped it and figured out where I wanted to get the CG placement of the aircraft. And it took a couple tries, but I got it down. And a lot of practice with the other manufacturers and tinkering with their aircrafts. I decided to manipulate the airfoil a little bit more to kind of create more lift for me. And with the material that I had, I was very limited. So I made sure I used up all the material I had.
Well, I was going to ask you, Ruben, what kind of material do you use for these?
A lot of the material for us in the hobby, I guess, since we lack the composite material, we use foam, and it's a EPP. It's expanded polypropylene foam. And it's very light and it's very forgiving. So you can craft with it, you can cut it, you can sand it down, but it's very versatile material and it's very chemical resistant, which is very nice for painting and adding other chemicals to it to make the frame rigid.
Is the control and communication essentially the same as you'd find in a quadcopter, for example?
For the most part, yes. You can pretty much put whatever's in a quadcopter inside a flying wing or an aircraft, any aircraft. But normally, my background, I don't really add flight controllers unless I'm going long range. But they have the regular 2.4 receiver. Mm-hmm. And then you can do long range with the UHF system in there. And then the video is just 5.8, 1.2 video links. And then there's other variants that are out there. But those are the more popular ones that can go inside.
Now, along the way, you've created several different FPV wings, haven't you? Can you tell us a little bit about what the differences are?
Yes. I have about five that I've created throughout the years. Since I started about 2013 with the first one, I then progressed into different sizes. So I made sure I can hit the different varieties size. So if people have a small vehicle or they want to transport it, you know, across country or whatever, just make everything pretty versatile. So I made sure I hit all the sizes. I make 26 inch runt. It's also an FPV wing, which houses a GoPro, 5,200 milliamp three cell battery. You can fly for about 20 minutes. You'll probably get bored after a while, but it's a pretty good little flyer. I considered it a bumblebee, and because it's the runt of the litter, I gave it that name. the next one up is the Flinch, and that's about 37 inches, and it's been around for quite some time. It's a counterpart to the Juggernaut, which is the next size up, and I had extra pieces from the Juggernaut, and I decided to cut a smaller airfoil, and it just turned out to be the Flinch. And the Flinch is a decent size airplane. It can do everything that the larger aircrafts can do in terms of payload and versatility, speed, and longevity for those endurance flights. The next size after that is the Juggernaut, which is about 48 inches. And it's pretty much been around. It was the first one that I've made in 2013. And since then, it's progressed into the version 2 and just adding extra parts to make it a little bit more, making the kit better. CNC motor mounts, CNC wire cutting, and just better materials that I've acquired throughout the years. And then after that, we go up to the next size, which is a little bit bigger. It's about 60 inches, and it's the Behemoth that I make. it's rather large. I don't consider it to be, it's, you need the room to carry it. It's a very large aircraft, capable of many things. And that one's just a heavy hitter that can carry from 5,000 milliamp 4S to 16,000 milliamp 4S. And just recently here in Hawaii, oh, not here in Hawaii, the trip that I went to for Drone Worlds, I made a 12S behemoth that I was able to hit 150 miles per hour in the air. And that's pretty much the record for me personally. I've never exceeded speeds like that before, but I was at a safe distance and in a secured location. So everything was, everything checked out. But the next size after that is the Dreadnought, and that's an 81.5-inch FPV wing.
That's huge.
And it's massive. So it's back, I think back in 2014 is when I created it. There were other versions that are out there, but this one was basically stands alone in terms of an aircraft. Payload is huge. I think I tested it with 5,000, 8,000, and 16. And then I the one I have on video on my YouTube page is a 32,000 milliamp 4S. And I didn't think it was going to fly, but we got it to fly finally. I had two of my buddies out there with me. My brother was out there. He was kind of assisting me. The video is pretty funny, but we were just showing that it can fly, the durability of it. And once I knew that, once I had these aircrafts tested, I can then progress into like another aspect of the hobby and or the careers that are out there. So I locked down these frames and tested them to their limits. And I was like, okay, well, let's go into, let's see what else we can do. And then the mapping started to kind of gain some speed. So I decided to test my feet into the mapping side of building an aircraft.
Well, what kinds of missions are your customers typically flying? I could imagine maybe a lot of them are sort of the standard, I say standard because it's so common now, but videography and aerial photography and that kind of thing. Is that primarily how your customers are using these wings, or are they looking at other applications as well?
Yes. Currently, the whole principle of designing these aircrafts was to carry a high def camera. And back when I first started, the only thing that was out there was the GoPro, and it had a case, and destroying them got expensive. So having a high def camera on there was definitely a plus. So throughout the years, the cameras have gotten better. The video quality is even better. So now you're editing video in 4K with beautiful sceneries, and these crafts can get you to these locations that you would have never really dreamed of. And now the bigger ones that I have, because I've tested them with the increased payload, I can put multiple cameras on there, so I can have multiple shots and multiple people in the air to get better video. And you can see that on my YouTube page. It's very I have it's the 81-inch Dreadnought, and I have different camera angles on there. So you can see the craft, you can see the scenery, and it's just really beautiful. The things you can see that are up there, I mean, it's just looking down is amazing.
So kind of going back to what I was asking earlier, as someone who's used to flying a quadcopter, let's say, maybe something with a GoPro or other kind of video camera attached, if they were to begin looking into FPV wing, is there something they should know or consider, or is the transition relatively easy? What can you tell us about that?
The transition, I think it's pretty easy. There's some products that are out there that are fairly reasonable. And just recently, I stumbled upon an aircraft that is on Banggood website, and it's called the S-800, and it's not my wing. I'm not promoting it, but I did come across it, and I can put it together relatively fast and used multi rotor equipment to make it fly. So it was relatively cheap. So learning and getting started, I don't think it was, I don't think it'd be that big of an issue to get started with something that's small, cheap, and easy to build. So I think it's pretty easy to kind of get involved. There's also other Flight Test has their wings that you can get started. They're relatively cheap. But once you learn, starting off with the, we'll call them, the cheaper brands, the throwaway brands, that you can progress into something that's a little bit more in depth, a little bit more expensive, that is capable of a lot more.
And that sounds just like the approach you'd take if you were starting out with quadcopters or something like that. You don't start out with a large, expensive, heavy quadcopter that's going to be a real problem the first time you crash it. You start small and learn and move up the scale. So, yeah, it makes sense that it would be the same with wings. Now, do I assume that what you're selling is kits? Do you sell ready to fly, or are these all kits?
I do sell kits. I do get asked if they can get a ready to fly aircraft. Those are a little bit more because it's my labor that is getting involved. I normally focus on the kits, and I tell the person who is looking at something that I have. I tell them, if you can learn to build it and follow the steps, the build videos, you're going to be better off out there in the field. If you have an issue, if you crash, you're going to know how to repair it.
Yes.
Because you know where everything is placed. And that's one thing that I try to push so much. And I'm not really worried about making the top dollar and push a product that, I'm trying to move through my store. It's like, I want people to learn to fly something that they create. And after so many builds, you're going to be a really good builder.
What's a typical build time for someone starting out?
Typical, probably about maybe a good weekend, Friday, probably about 3 days, Friday into the weekend. Because of the glues, they have to dry and set. A lot of the clear adhesives, they take a couple hours to dry, so you don't really want to mess with it. You want to make sure it sets up. And then the painting, it needs to dry. If it's cold temperature, like right now, it's pretty cold in my neck of the woods, the paint dries a lot slower. So you have to be patient.
Of course. Well, you're a small company in what is potentially growing to be a very huge market, especially if you consider the drones as one market. It's really not one market, but there are opportunities anyway for, I think, a lot of players, a lot of companies. How has it been for you so far? Was starting up a drone company more difficult than you had anticipated, or has it been just smooth sailing from the start?
It's actually been pretty smooth. I've been pretty happy with the results. Starting out was a little bit slow, and I was kind of doing it for myself. I made about five for myself, and I didn't really get to keep any of them. They basically, once they saw them fly, they were like, oh, I want one. And so after that, they said, you got to build these, you got to sell these, you got to create more. And it's been going pretty good. I've made my progress known on RC Groups, which is a really good website. If you're starting out and you just want some information, the guys on there are pretty helpful. And from then I started to get traction. And from the YouTube videos to the build videos, it started to get, pretty crazy. And then in 2014, I was like, well, I think I need to turn this into a career. but again, I'm still doing this part time. I don't do this full time. My full time job is pretty busy, but I just love doing this, and the need and the demand is starting to increase into 2017. So we'll see what happens. I'm very excited to keep this thing going. It's a lot of fun.
I noticed on your website that some of your models are sold out at this time, even.
Christmas was a good month. November was really good. I didn't anticipate having product leave my house so fast, but it's very nice. I'm very thankful for the support and the guys that are out there who actually follow me and been there throughout my progress. So it's just an awesome feeling to kind of get my name out there and get the brand known out there in the RC world.
All right. Well, very good. Ruben, tell our listeners where they can find you online, the website, but you're also in social media, I think.
That's correct. I'm on Facebook. You can find my Sweep Wings page over there. And I have an Instagram page that I usually post my pictures of the builds. I do some tech tips. I usually post or repost other builders who have my product. And, you know, just to give them a little bit more awareness of these guys are out there and they're doing a really good job so other people can see them. My YouTube page is doing pretty good. But I just try to be there for everyone on the social media. If they have an issue, I like to be available for them.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you, Rupen. We do have a couple of news items that we have time for. Just mention pretty quickly, I guess. We have one article from CNN. This is Amazon patent hints at floating warehouses in the sky. Now, this patent has been awarded to Amazon. It's titled Airborne Fulfillment Center Utilizing Unmanned Aerial Vehicles for Item Delivery. And this patent, and I'll quote from the patent, it describes an airborne fulfillment center, or an AFC, and the use of unmanned aerial vehicles to deliver items from the AFC to users. It says, for example, the AFC may be an airship that remains at high altitude, like 45,000 feet, and UAVs with ordered items may be deployed from the AFC to deliver ordered items to the user-designated delivery locations. As the UAVs descend, they can navigate horizontally toward a user-specified delivery location using little or no power, other than to stabilize the UAV and or guide the direction of descent. And then it says shuttles or smaller airships may be used to replenish the AFC with inventory, UAVs, supplies, fuel, etc. Likewise, the shuttles may be utilized to transport workers to and from the AFC. Ruben, we see a lot of patents that are coming out for various drone-related ideas. Probably most of them you'll never see in practice being utilized. Amazon, I think, it's kind of difficult to see what the motivation is here for Amazon. Maybe they just want to continue to make statements that give people the idea that they take package delivery pretty seriously in an effort to keep that rolling along. I don't know, Ruben, what do you think about that? Do you have any thoughts on package delivery by drone?
I'm still skeptical. I'm a little worried if my package was floating in the sky and somebody who had an idea that they want to try to snatch it. I'd be a little concerned about that.
It's really easy to think of many complications associated with a process like that. I find myself doing that and I hate it because I try to be open-minded to new ideas and new things and not be just one of those guys who says, that'll never work. But when it comes to package delivery, there are just so many challenges. So it's interesting, another patent from Amazon. We'll also mention, and this actually came to us from Chris in our Slack team, the European Safety Agency, the Aviation Safety Agency in Europe is working on the preparation of a specific operation risk assessment and operations manual. We have a PDF here. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. It's the roadmap for drone operations in the European Union, the rollout of the EU operation-centric approach. Another resource that we'll put in the show notes, this is RPAS regulations, which is at rpas-regulations.com. This is a guide to international rules and regulations for RPAS, Remotely Piloted Aircraft Systems. Something you can check out, I will mention that it is a restricted access website. You have to register to get access, but I was able to do that without really too much difficulty. So there's some resources for you for European regulations. A couple of announcements. Follow-up. Last episode, episode 176, we talked about the Naval Research Laboratory's Ion Tiger. You may recall that that's a fuel cell-powered drone. And we were a little confused, or maybe I was a little confused about the power of the hydrogen fuel cell. Well, we contacted them, and Victor Chen from the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory spoke with the team and had some clarifying information. Now, he said that the first fuel cell that they used was a commercial 550-watt system. And then, as we said, the fuel cell that just flew was built in-house at NRL. Now, Victor says that it was bench tested to 3,000 watts, and theoretically it's scalable to 5,000 watts, which is kind of a monster. That's a lot of power. He noted that during the test that was the subject of the article we talked about, the system actually flew at 1,300 watts, and it was really limited by the airframe propeller and motor. So just a little bit of clarification on the power there. Ruben, we're seeing more and more fuel cell, particularly hydrogen fuel cell applications for drones. I'm not sure exactly how commercialized those fuel cells are, if you can just go out and buy a fuel cell. But you'd get some long range with one of those on a on a wing.
Oh, easy. Well, I can catch them pretty easily. My craft here is about 4,000 watts.
Really?
And I think I could probably catch it.
Very good. Let's see, another item we wanted to mention. There is now a news link at the top menu at the UAVDigest.com. And if you click that, it takes you to a page on our site that has a number of drone or UAS news stories. These are curated by PR Newswire. It's kind of a little handy way to kind of dip in and see what some of the current news is in this area. So again, you might want to take a look at that. It's just at the top of our webpage. Just click news and it'll take you right there. Now, we do have a video of the week. This is BMT UAV performs perched landing using machine learning algorithms. And this comes from SUAS News. They report that the University of Bristol, in partnership with BMT Defense Services, they've used machine learning algorithms to allow a UAV to make a perched landing. And there's a video that includes, I think, some animation, but also includes some actual test flights. And that video will be in the show notes. You can find those at the uavdigest.com/177. They note the sort of the motivation for a perched landing is that in urban environments, in maritime environments, those represent a challenge for fixed-wing UAVs. They also note that morphing wing aircraft maybe have a potential to perform these perched landings. So what they've done is they've used what they call deep reinforcement learning. Boy, there's a, I'm not sure exactly what that is, to generate a perched trajectory for a variable sweep aircraft. So take a look at this video. To me, what it really looks like is that this UAV comes in at a fairly low approach. Then the wing shape is changed, and it looks like, it causes a nose-up stall, and the UAV then just drops the few feet kind of gently onto the ground. So I'm not sure I would call this perching per se, but maybe it's a step in that direction. I don't know, Ruben, not quite as easy as you being able to catch one of your wings as the you know, the complete recovery method.
Yeah, that looks a little bit difficult there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. One piece of feedback. This came in from Patrick. He notes that, well, you know what? Package delivery by drone has made it into a Garfield cartoon. And so I won't spoil it for you, but there'll be a link in the show notes, and you can take a look at Garfield. If you're not familiar, Garfield, of course, is a cartoon cat. I guess I would say beloved by many. So thanks, thanks, Patrick, for sending that in. And then just one final announcement, and we'll close this episode. Both UAV Propulsion Tech and Go Engineer will again be sponsoring the UAV Digest in 2017. So we're really, really honored that they've continued their support of this podcast. Of course, you can find UAV Propulsion Tech at uavpropulsiontech.com. Go Engineer, you can get to them by going to the uavdigest.com/goengineer, and that'll redirect you right over to their site. So again, we thank them for sponsoring the UAV Digest. All right, that's it for this episode. We want to thank our guest, Ruben Houdegui. Ruben, again, thanks so much. Hey, good luck with the business.
Well, thank you very much, Max. I appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, stay in touch. We'll put links to the website, also some of the YouTube videos in the show notes, so you can see more about what Ruben is producing. And it's very exciting stuff. And fast. How come these things go so fast, Ruben?
It's top secret.
Trade secret.
I mean, to do it, and just to say that I did it. And that way I can say, okay, that check that mark off the line, I'd be okay.
Hey, have you done any racing at all? Drone racing?
Yes, I have. I've attended the Canada event out there, and I've went to the Drone Nationals in New York, and I competed there. I didn't finish because I had to leave Sunday, which was the finals, and I catch a plane back home. And then I flew all the way to Hawaii and did the Drone Nationals out there. So, yeah, I've tested a little bit. It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty exciting. And I think even you mentioned somewhere that with the, I guess, promotion that ESPN has started to do and some other activities, that drone racing is really kind of poised to take off.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like. A lot of the big contenders are starting to kind of turn their head to what we're doing. And like the DRL is popping up. Mountain Dew is taking a liking.
Hmm.
And it's doing really, really good. I see a huge new sport on the horizon because of these crafts are unmanned and safe. And the advertising aspect of it, you can have their brand on the side of an aircraft, you know, a 60 or 80 inch wing that is doing 100 plus miles an hour in a secured location. So it's, if you're at home and you have, you know, a good internet connection, you'll be able to check it out.
Fantastic. It's very exciting. All right. Well, you've been listening to episode 177 of the UAV Digest. Find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes are at theuavdigest.com/177. You can follow us on Twitter at UAV Digest. Facebook, find us there. If you'd like to send us email, you can write to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Of course, look for us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher.com. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, we have a Patreon page. Visit us at patreon.com/theuavdigest. So with that, we'll say goodbye and see you next week. We look forward to David joining us again. Thanks for listening.